Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning, we start in the Middle East because hostilities have paused but tensions are still high after Israel's weekend airstrike on Hezbollah. And I'm joined now from South Lebanon by Orla Guerin, Senior International Correspondent with the BBC. Good morning, Orla.
Morning, Claire.
So tell us a little bit about what happened at the weekend, the scale of Israel's attack on Hezbollah. What happened?
Well, throughout the week, there had been this escalation in the conflict. It was heating up. The tempo of the strikes and counter-strikes was getting faster. And overnight, we had what Israel described as a preemptive strike. It says it 100 fighter jets up in the air because it had intelligence that Hezbollah was going to strike and that its jets then destroyed many Hezbollah firing positions. This was all at about 4:30 in the morning. Hezbollah then at 5 o'clock in the morning says it carried out its attack exactly as it planned. It said it intended to use over 300 Katyusha rockets, that it did that, and also that it sent drones into Israel. Now, we have no independent account of what actually happened on the ground. Did some of those missiles or rockets hit their mark or did they not? The Israelis have said that no military bases or barracks were hit by Hezbollah. Hezbollah claims, in contrast, that the attack was a success. But I think what's interesting to note, Claire, about this is what Hezbollah didn't do. This was the long-awaited retaliation for Israel's assassination of a Hezbollah commander called Fuad Shukr that happened at the end of July in the group's stronghold in Beirut, a place called Dahiya. Now, since then, Hezbollah retaliation had been inevitable. The only question was the timing and the scale. Well, when the retaliation came, Hezbollah did not choose critical infrastructure. It didn't target that. It didn't target major cities. It didn't target civilians. In fact, it didn't kill civilians. The same is true for what Israel did yesterday. It targeted Hezbollah military positions. Both sides, I think, were extremely careful in their actions. It was very carefully calibrated on both sides. The clear message that is coming out from that is that neither side wanted this to escalate into all-out war. And in fact, a Hezbollah official yesterday said on the record that that's exactly what Hezbollah wanted. It wanted to retaliate, but not to provoke an all-out confrontation. And the Hezbollah leader, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, said that they had delayed this action to allow time for a ceasefire in Gaza. But he said in the end, they had basically lost faith in that. They thought the talks could go on forever. Mm-hmm. And he accused the Israeli leader of stalling.
So on that, on how careful and calibrated this has been, I mean, right from the get-go, even at the point when people were waiting for Israel to retaliate against Hamas, the fear was always that Hezbollah would become involved in a much greater way. Why have they held back in the way that they have? What's behind that?
Well, since October, Hezbollah has been involved in the conflict, but in a very limited and very careful way. So it began targeting Israeli positions on October the 8th, the day after Hamas militants stormed out of Gaza and killed 1,200 Israelis in a single day. But its actions have stayed within what are known here as the rules of engagement. Now, that's basically the typical manner in which Israel and Hezbollah engage in conflict. So, for example, since October, almost every day or every other day, we've had exchanges of fire, but both sides have tended to stick to the area close to their common border. They have tended to pick military targets. That's not an absolute rule. There have been instances where billions have been killed. So there has been a cost to this conflict. But given the arsenal that Hezbollah has at its disposal, its engagement has been limited. I think that has partly been because it didn't want to provoke an all-out war. I think equally important, its backers in Tehran didn't want Hezbollah to become engaged by Israel and for Hezbollah to perhaps suffer heavy losses. Hezbollah is a very valuable tool for the Iranians. They want to use it at critical moment. And frankly, they were not prepared to sacrifice Hezbollah for the sake of its ally Hamas in Gaza, which is also backed by Tehran.
Now, the message that Hezbollah is sending out, that was very clear from that lengthy address from its leader, Hassan Nasrallah, last night. What did he have to say about the attack over the weekend?
Well, he almost deconstructed the entire attack, the planning, why it had taken place at the time when it did. He said that part of the reason for the delay, for the wait, had been to impose a psychological punishment on Israel. This is something he has said before, that the waiting was part of the punishment. He talked about the targets. He said they wanted to specifically hit an Israeli intelligence base where he said Mossad was located, and another air base from which drones were flown. He said that the attack had been a complete success and that as far as Hezbollah was concerned, things could finish right here and now. But he did say they reserve the right to go back again in the future and seek further revenge if they think that's necessary. But he said, and in words that were very striking, he said, people can feel at ease now. People can get on with their lives. It's been a month in which people have been very tense, and that can stop. And it's noticeable here this morning, Claire, that there is a sense of people having been able to exhale. It's not that there is peace. The continuing sort of low-level conflict between Hezbollah and Israel, that's very likely to continue as it was before. But the fears about a big escalation, a tipping point into all-out war, those have receded for now. But, you know, as many here will say, every day that goes by with the two sides engaged in attack and counterattack carries risks. And one of the main risks may be that by accident rather than design, they fall into all-out war, even though both sides say they don't want it.
So would you expect then that the international community, in particular the United States, will also be able to exhale today? Because the big fear has always been an escalation involving Hezbollah. Has that risk passed in any sense?
I think the risk has receded for the moment, and I wouldn't put it more strongly than that. But it was interesting yesterday, the degree to which both sides exercised caution, both sides choreographed their actions so very carefully. So it was very clear that both of them were sending a message, both Israel and Hezbollah, that they do not want an all-out conflict now. I think the big problem for the Americans and for the region, and most acutely for the Palestinians in Gaza, is that the horror of Gaza is continuing. And this is the engine that is fueling instability all around the region. Absent a ceasefire in Gaza, there will still be confrontation here between Hezbollah and Israel. Hezbollah has said explicitly that if Hamas accepts a ceasefire in Gaza, that will be good enough for Hezbollah. It won't need any discussions. It won't ask any questions. It will simply stop firing. So a ceasefire would unlock an easing of tension across the region. But the indications we have, Claire, is that the chances are still pretty remote. The talks have finished in Cairo with any breakthrough, without any progress. Hamas and Israel are still sticking to two very different positions. The Americans say they are continuing their feverish efforts, but for now there's not much to show for it.
Mm-hmm. Because the Americans, if we remember back to this time last week and in the days coming up to last Monday, Joe Biden was really confident that they had a deal. Anthony Blinken on his ninth visit over there saying, seemed to be pretty confident as well. Again, that fell by the wayside pretty quickly once we heard from the two parties involved. And it seems that they're no further along now.
I wonder how much genuine confidence there was from the Americans, Claire, and how much was a matter of talking things up, because they have been desperately trying to do that, trying to create a positive atmosphere. President Biden saying that a deal was closer than ever before. And yet every time he opened his mouth, it seemed to be undermined by what would come from Israeli sources and indeed from the Israeli leader, who says his position has not changed. And Hamas are saying their position hasn't changed either. Their basic statement now is that they agreed to an American ceasefire proposal that emerged at the beginning of July. They said yes, as far as they're concerned, that proposal and that proposal alone should now be implemented without any further Israeli changes or, as they would see it, obstructions. Hamas claims Israel has continued to introduce new demands. Israel denies. Actually, we're just clarifying various points. But where we are now is that we are still, as far as we can see, no closer to that deal being agreed. There is enormous pressure on both sides, on both Israel and Hamas, to get a deal done. Certainly, Benjamin Netanyahu is under huge domestic pressure from the families of the remaining hostages who are being held in Gaza, who know that every day that goes by means their lives continue to be at risk. But he's also under pressure from the in his own cabinet, who have said they will collapse the government if he agrees to a ceasefire. So it's hard to see where the scope is going to come clear for movement. There has been speculation and a bit of talk about a possible compromise being found, which would involve, for example, a UN presence along the border between Gaza and Egypt, rather than an Israeli presence, which is what Netanyahu has been insisting on, but there's no sign yet of Israel budging on that. And there's no sign of Hamas being prepared to accept other than a full ceasefire. They say there has to be an agreement on a permanent ceasefire and a full withdrawal of Israeli troops. Now, can progress be made along the sidelines? Perhaps. But things really have been moving at a pretty glacial pace, despite all of this immense international pressure, huge engagement from the Americans, constant pressure from the Egyptians and the Qataris, who were also mediating. And we have to bear in mind that the American election is getting closer by the day. And at a certain point, Washington's attention is going to shift. So I think there is a real feeling that if there is going to be progress, it really needs to happen quite soon. Otherwise, we will go into a lull before the American election.
OK, Orla, thank you very much for bringing us the very latest on all of that. That's Orla Gearan, senior international correspondent with the BBC.